Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project. Everybody's waiting.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is February 28th. Happy leap year. This is Free Bonus Friday, and this is the installment where we find out if anyone is actually listening to these. And actually, I know people are listening to these because since I started doing this, a lot of people have joined us on Patreon or in the AV Club, and that is greatly appreciated. I hope you're all enjoying the experience. So this week's subscriber-only show, not the one you're going to hear in this preview, but the one that I release to supporters, is usually referred to as Mastermind, and it is a group conversation that I do with Richard Grove's Autonomy Group every Tuesday night. Most of what happens in these conversations does not get posted. I am, of course, very appreciative of the people who support School Sucks. They make School Sucks possible, so to show that appreciation, I like to be as respectful of their time as possible. And that's one of the reasons why we've kind of serialized our bonus content, so you can know what to expect and you can choose what you want to listen to. Like, this is a show where we have a historical discussion. This is a show where we have a movie discussion. This is a show about personal and professional development. And the masterminds, I edit and only post to Patreon and the AV Club if I think there's definitely something that a lot of people in the audience can get value out of. And also, I said, because that's a conversation that involves a lot of private people, I didn't want to preview those where, you know, thousands and thousands of people could hear them on these Free Bonus Fridays, so you won't get to hear them here. We did have a great conversation last Tuesday. We talked about vaccines. We talked about messaging without doing too much massaging. And that kind of led us into a conversation about the effectiveness of Alex Jones for the condition of freedom in the United States and his actual contribution to the ongoing so-called information war over the last two decades. And then I actually got some really positive feedback from an autonomy participant on some advice that I had given maybe like 6 or 7 weeks ago. And that led into an interesting conversation about embracing discomfort. So that is available in Patreon and the AV Club, but I'm not going to preview it here. Instead, what I'm going to share with you today is an earlier version, an earlier attempt to start this kind of mastermind conversation all the way back from June 2018. It is with fellow podcast masters, Osborne and Gardner. And the original format for the show is we would take a political, cultural, educational problem and use it as a kind of pain point and then discuss it long form. Our first pain point was about Hollywood's and public schooling's alarming attempts to sexualize children. You're going to hear a 20-minute selection from that conversation. There's about 40 minutes in the show that precede this and about an hour that follows. There's a link to the entire audio in the show notes, both in the AV Club and on Patreon. And what we are talking about is relatively controversial, so I want to issue a couple trigger warnings. Number one, use of the word deviant in the context of homosexuality. First, in our culture, the word deviant obviously comes packaged with a lot of judgment. It is being used here in a non-judgmental connotation, simply referencing deviation from what most people consider normal. There are a couple of words and phrases that are not considered politically correct. I actually did snip a few parts out of even the 20-minute portion you're going to hear because I'm not looking to get in trouble. But the whole conversation, I thought, was a good balance between a thoughtful investigation of this issue and an effort to amuse the listeners. So certainly interested in your thoughts. As always, I will be back next week continuing my monthly conversation with Jim Hood. I recorded an episode of Lions of Liberty last night with Mark Clare. That was awesome. I love that guy. I think he and I are actually going to work together more soon. He said he got a ton of questions from his patrons. So we're going to do a follow-up to that conversation. You'll hear that in March. And I also have a couple of conversations with some educators with connections to some very prestigious institutions. That is in our near future as well. We are just about a week away from the Encore of the Ideas into Action Summit. If you are interested in obtaining that entire digital package today, please go to SSPUniversity.com/ideas into action. More people should be emailing me saying this is too expensive. I want to get you a discount and give you a chance to help your favorite content creator. So hit me up, Brett@schoolsucksproject.com. Thank you so much for listening. Even though if you're easily offended, do not listen to this. Maybe just think about catching the next one next Friday. Okay, here we go. Are we 40 years from now, the three of us, are we the guys who made the Coronet film in the 1960s where it's like, beware the gays, you know?
The following Saturday, they went fishing together. By now, they were using first names. Ralph said it was more friendly. Jimmy hadn't enjoyed himself so much in a long time. Then during lunch, Ralph showed him some pornographic pictures. Jimmy knew he shouldn't be interested, but, well, he was curious. What Jimmy didn't know was that Ralph was sick, a sickness that was not visible like smallpox, but no less dangerous and contagious, a sickness of the mind. You see, Ralph was a homosexual, a person who demands an intimate relationship with members of their own sex. But by now, Jimmy felt a fondness for Ralph, and they continued to go places together. Ralph was generous and took Jimmy many interesting places and did many nice things for him.
And then there's a question, is that right or is that wrong? Or where did that go too far? Where did beware of the blank go? Like, how far back in the past you have to go to be wrong about that, right? So, well, so like, if you're just thinking about like the historical perspective of it, is there going to be a day if people look back at us in 2018 and say people used to be so prude they didn't even want kids to know about sex? In fact, people on the left have been saying that for a while, right? They didn't want kids to know about sex. But then you have a changing definition of what it means to know about sex and who the teacher is in the act of learning about sex and what their attitudes are about sex.
And making them think that they need to be participating in it right now.
Oh, well, there's that as well.
And then so to your point about bewaring of the gays, there's a difference between, you know, being cool with adults growing up to participate in deviant behaviors and encouraging children to do it. And in fact, like to some degree, forcing them to, or it becoming fashionable to have a deviant child. Right. So having a transgender child now has become the new dog in the purse, I have said in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's a strange to me there.
Like,
too.
Oh, look at me. Look how progressive I am. Look at me.
I know. And then there's also like the logistics of it. They're like, oh, thank God. I thought I was going to have to go to Africa to get a kid.
Right. Yeah.
But to me, there's two tracks on this, and sometimes they cross. You know, there might be some little clover leaves every once in a while that, you know, traffic turns onto or on or off of. But there's the cultural side of it, and then there is the institutional government side of it. So there has been a battle for a long time regarding sexual education inside the institutions that are forcibly taking money from people and demanding that they pay for that. And clearly, those institutions are not serving the purposes of many parents, and they get very frustrated, and they have a right to be frustrated because their money's being taken from them to pay for this. That agenda of, I think, early sexualization, if a parent has a problem with it, they should be able to decide, I don't want my child to participate, and a taxpayer shouldn't have to pay for that sort of thing. I mean, that's a very basic moral, ethical point, I believe. So regardless of whether somebody thinks it's too too loose an attitude about sexuality, or that it introduces children too early, or that someone might think it's too prudish and somehow the school should be more open. They all have a valid argument to be made as long as some of their money is being taken for something that they don't like. By the same token, then you have society. And outside of the forced, coerced system of the government education system, you have entertainment. And you have, I think, different things that occasionally bleed from one to the other. And because, you know, many people just don't distinguish anymore the difference between society and the state. And the state is often affected by certain changes in society, or they think they've got to affect changes in society, so they push something. So this is where they bleed over in the probably many other areas that people can think of that I haven't even mentioned yet, where they bleed over. But the two tracks, to me, the cultural track, is that becomes very difficult, especially if you have the capacity for kids to get access to entertainment at virtually any time. They are going to be self-directed oftentimes. So if you've got cultural things where the kids are being exposed to these sorts of things, there's a responsibility that adults have to be aware of what they're producing if they are producing these things.
Right. And I think what can happen, like if people do want to program kids, because that has been a tool of the religious left, is like, we have to...
Absolutely.
You know, it's since if we don't have good arguments, it's better to get people at birth than to try and convert them later.
Right. It's like the former Justice Department head said, you know, when we talk about guns.
Yeah.
We have to, you know, under Obama, Eric Holder said, well, we just have to, you know, almost hypnotize people. We have to just
brainwash.
Brainwash is the word. Exactly. We have to almost brainwash people. We have to say it over and over again. Always, 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 always. Which is exactly what they do.
So do you know the word cybernetics?
Sure.
Right? And this is – so it's a reference to like a rudder,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So to be a rudder – now in cybernetics, it's like to be the rudder for the entire society, right? Mm-hmm. To slowly turn it in a new direction. But if you just think about it on an individual level, the role of education, as far as I think a lot – of people who are interested in socially engineering a new type of society, you just have to guide people, right? You just have to give them the tilt to send them in the direction towards the pop culture, right? Where they'll get reinforcement for whatever the messaging is. School teaches you that these things are right and wrong, right? Nuclear power and Republicans are bad,
right,
you know, and
right.
Bernie Sanders and genderless society is good,
right?
You know, those kinds of things. And if that rudder just turns, then that person goes to a certain type of entertainment, maybe for other types of confirmation of those ideas, right? Now, I mean, I guess there's some who will resist, right?
Yeah.
But education can be very powerful in just tilting somebody in the direction and giving them the push to go a certain way.
Well, can I ask you, both of you, how much of this do you think is intentional? Okay, so let's look at sexuality, right? But there are a lot of other things. SJW, emotionalism, postmodernists, labeling the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
We know that some of this can be Machiavellian. Some of this can be plotting.
Sure.
There are plenty of Saul Alinsky's out there.
Yeah.
You know, and there are plenty of people who are postmodernist, and they will use deconstructionism. They will use any tool they can to try to tell you this is the hidden message behind it, to try to say, hey, you can't argue with me because you come from a white patriarchy, and therefore anything you say is a product, even if you overtly don't think it is. You subliminally have been raised this way, so there's no escape. So therefore, you might as well not even contribute to the conversation. But by the same token, what I'm wondering is, and I'll ask you guys, do you think that a lot of this comes from just the natural tendency for pop culture to appeal to the lowest common denominator, which is typically sex, titillation? I mean, how many hundreds of years have you had the penny dreadfuls? You have pornography. You have different things. So if you've got mass media will probably produce mass pornography. How much do you think this is directed by people who are plotting versus self-directed, almost because in the heart of society, it's almost unavoidable?
Is there even an anti-capitalist?
It's got to be plotting when it refers to media that's intended for the children, right?
Yeah, I would think that there's
the children are not sitting around saying, "Oh man, I wish I had some porn right now." Right.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Tranny porn.
So they're like,
no, they don't.
Right.
So that's what I was going to ask you, Osborne. Is sex the new smoking? Right. Is there even like this anti-capitalist angle in this? Like, remember how the cigarette companies wanted to try and get kids to smoke, and it was true. They were trying to get kids interested in cigarettes to get them hooked at a young age. If sex is a powerful tool for controlling behavior and marketing to people, why not start getting folks interested in it at a younger age? You know?
Right.
But is all of this like pansexuality or transgenderism like the way to see that? To me, seems more like a progressive thing, right? Because that's what it seems that most of the complaints are about. It's not just like, hey, they're talking about kids, talking to kids about sex at too early an age.
Right.
It's they're talking to kids about this stuff before kids are even hitting puberty.
So I think that's a really strong question, and I sort of would answer it with, how much of that do you think is driven by a new form of the so-called white guilt, which is something that a generation like 20 years ahead of us, that was a term that they were using a lot, when it might be that many people are including these sorts of themes because they, even though they're straight, they feel that it's important to do so because they're making up for lost ground or they're doing something good for an oppressed group. And in order to train children – in order to make it better for that oppressed group, they have to train children to be more accepting of this sort of thing. So it might not be a plot on their part to indoctrinate children to, say, participate in this, but it might be more of an idea of, well, I personally, on the production side of this, feel guilty about this or feel there needs to be some social rectification that happens. And so, therefore, we're going to keep putting themes like this in here. I mean – You know what I mean?
I think that makes perfect sense. Is that would be social justice.
Exactly. That's precisely where I'm going. Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the areas where I see – you could see this happening real time with Doctor Who. Like literally, I was going to the Doctor Who conventions when the show was off the air. I got called the day before by a friend of mine in England who was friends with Russell Davies and said, "Guard, the show's coming back. Don't tell anybody. It'll be in the London Times tomorrow." And I was like, this is awesome. This is great because everybody was looking forward to this. But Doctor Who became a tool of social justice warriorism. It became the fans, many of whom – and by the way, I was surprised to discover that in England, Doctor Who had a very, very big gay fan base, really big. And it's quite interesting to see how the societal demands or the fandom demands have interceded in the direction of Doctor Who, that they have steered it in a certain way.
Did they make Doctor Who a woman?
Yes. And
so is it called Nurse Who now?
Yeah.
That's a good sexist joke, everybody. And I'm sorry if it's not original, but
it's called Little Cindy Lou Who. I'm taking it to my TARDIS because this light won't light. But it's weird because for me, and it, you know, I mentioned this before thematically, that impinges on my ability to be able to suspend disbelief because all I'm thinking about is the production team sitting around a table saying, "Oh, let's do this." And I'm not involved with the fiction anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to immerse myself. I'm old enough now where, you know, and I've been on enough sets where I know, you know, they had the lights set up here and, you know, the gaffers did this and then they broke for lunch. You know, that stuff can enter my mind. I don't want it to enter my mind when I'm watching a story. I heard someone recently saying that he was watching Friends and a buddy of his, it was a podcast I was listening to on YouTube. He said, "Yeah, I didn't realize it, but, you know, my roommate was like, 'Oh man, that show's so racist. Five or six white people are all friends.'" Like, you know, and he's like,
you know, that happens in real life all the time.
I know. Yeah. It's like, you know, and here's so, and from my background, so this is, I sometimes I feel like I'm at a disadvantage because and I'm not saying this to like to blow smoke or anything like that, but like when I grew up, I never thought about this stuff. Like I watched Sanford and Son, and it was just a funny show. And Fred Sanford was wicked funny, you know, and Chico and the Man was wicked good. You know, it was funny. I thought it was great. And Mission Impossible, my favorite character was this dude, Barney. He was a black guy. Mm-hmm. And I just thought he was cool, you know. I mean, and so maybe that was the result of people taking steps to try to be SJWs and introduce new themes and be open and stuff and things like that. So maybe you know, I was the beneficiary of stuff like that in a way, which is kind of strange that I could possibly be criticizing people for doing things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe I was blind to the fact that I was being socially manipulated and into becoming more open-minded, but I never thought twice. Who freaking cares? You know, I just don't get it. It doesn't connect with me.
Well, is there a political pressure on the entertainment industry that's like, this should be a mixed race couple, right? Well,
Now it's gone way past.
But there's also some competition. Like, don't be the show that doesn't have the mixed race culture. Don't be the show that doesn't have the gay guy.
Right.
Or coming soon, don't be the show that doesn't have the transgender person that isn't presented in a, you know, comical way.
Yeah.
So it might almost, it's not exactly one upping, but it's kind of like keeping up with the Joneses of progressivism in entertainment.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that gets me about that, if that is the case, it's almost this sort of, I hate to say it, but it's almost this sort of heartless superficiality that even though they're trying to be caring, it becomes all based on superficiality. I mean, when can you really – is it ever possible to get past having to continually break things down for some subcategory and have that be – part of it or a major part of it at the expense of something else, which could be a different lesson about the soul or a human emotional experience, that because they're focusing so much on this other stuff, we're missing these things.
But I hate to keep bringing this back to the left, but it is very much about superficiality and bean counting and appearances and not real and doing things that feel good, even if you have to continuously deny the fact to yourself that it's not helping, right?
And just to say too, Brett, you know, to give them a little bit, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm just slapping them around too much in this thought process, but I understand that some people believe that that is important and that they do think there is a deeper something there, that I'm missing the point, you know, that, hey, guard, you know, we are getting something through here. It's about human love. It's the human family. It's the spectrum. It's the rainbow, you know, whatever it is.
I think a lot of the movies that actually confronted these things in a not so superficial way,
right,
would today be considered too racist to even be shown. Like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Mm-hmm.
Or what was the Sidney Poitier movie In the Heat of the Night?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So those movies, they probably have the N-word in them, mm-hmm. you know? Like, yeah. Those movies today would say, no, we can't watch movies like that because they're overtly racist. But they actually, you know, deal with these subjects on a deeper level than just sticking a black person or a gay person in a show.
Yeah, I think it becomes very difficult to navigate. Sorry, go ahead.
That's a phrase that you hear a lot these days is we need to have an honest conversation about race.
Yeah. In other words, I'm right, you're like wrong.
The opposite of that is what they're really saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have had honest conversations in the past and we're not allowed to anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, to bring it back to what you were talking about with this dog movie and stuff and possible programming and grooming for future kids to be, you know, grow up in these ways to you know, inject these ideas. It's just so strange. I would not think that somebody who wants people to be more open to, you know, the great spectrum of, you know, my sex junk, as they had in that dumb Bill Nye thing on Netflix. I mean, just so stupid, so stupid. And that show is not designed for kids either. It's a Netflix show, not designed for kids. It's designed for late teens, early 20s people or something. I don't know who they think they are trying to be hip to, but it's not for little kids.
Right. It's to people who watch Bill Nye as a kid he was great when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's who it's for.
Yeah, they're going, yeah. So, but like, how in the world would anybody think that injecting that sort of stuff, and you know, again, is it that, you know, race to try to get as much of that stuff in there where they all think they have to do that suddenly they're making a mistake? Or they can't be making a mistake, they must be doing it intentionally, and that has nothing to do, I can't see that as having anything to do with, well, kids, you're going to grow up and be more understanding now.
Like, I don't think anybody's making, like, sitting in the writer's room and being like, this will sexualize kids, this will make kids want to fuck adults. You know, like, I mean, and I'm not saying that that kind of stuff doesn't happen in Hollywood. We know that it does.
Yeah.
But I'm always reminded of there's this great talk that Kevin Smith gave. I don't know what it was, but he's just like, he's just at a podium in front of a bunch of people, and he's like talking about his whole career, and he's talking about getting asked to write Superman, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's this dipshit producer guy who's just completely disconnected from the entire world, right? As so many in Hollywood are.
Yeah.
You know, the story is that the guy doesn't know anything about Superman, right? The producer. And Kevin Smith is like this huge Superman fan.
Yeah.
And at one point, the guy's like, well, do you think you could put like a giant mechanical spider in the movie? You think you could get that in there? I really want to see a giant mechanical spider, you know? And I imagine, and then he couldn't get it in, or Kevin Smith was pushed off that, you know, project. And this guy went on to produce Wild Wild West, where there was a giant mechanical spider, you know, so he got his way because he's a producer and he wanted to see that in a movie.
Yeah.
I think maybe a lot of these people just have a similar kind of retarded innocence. You know, they have this political mindset. Like once we kind of inject politics, we move away from giant mechanical spiders and into identity politics.
Sure. Right.
And, you know, they just have their giant mechanical spiders that they feel like should be in the movie because it makes them feel good.
Yeah.
And there isn't, and is there like, as Jay Dyer might suggest, a higher agenda that these people are there because they're being puppeteered to want these things?
That kept popping in my head. I keep thinking of Jay Dyer. What do you say?
But are these people, again, it's just back to like, are they thinking they're observing from the distance, from the Hollywood Hills, from Beverly Hills? They observe what they think is the zeitgeist, right? Because they're in a bubble inside a bubble,
right?
And they say, these are the things that we need to put in movies, or these are the things that we need to put in TV shows, or these are the things that would be funny or poignant or whatever it is, whatever the situation calls for. And there's nothing, often there's nothing super malevolent about it. This is different from the CIA project where they go and they put ideas into the heads of writers and producers and directors to put things in movies.
Right.
This is just, you know, the old analogy of or the old metaphor of fish in the water. They don't know they're in the water. This is just the water.
It's their environment.
Yeah. But it's becoming, and then there's the question of why. Is it more entertainment, or is it more academic influence, or even, you know, political influence in some ways? The things that are contributing to the culture changing, that this is just becoming the water.
I think that's a great point.
And so are we the Coronet film? I would say, you know, 40 years is generous. 10 years from now, are we the Coronet film for being concerned about the sexualization of children in various types of entertainment?